What if everything you've been told about trauma recovery is wrong? What if the path to healing doesn't require you to relive your worst moments? For decades, conventional wisdom has insisted that survivors must process their trauma, dig deep, remember everything, feel it all again. But here's a radical truth. Recovery doesn't have to be more painful than the trauma itself. This isn't wishful thinking or avoidance. It's a framework built on decades of clinical experience and neuroscience that puts you, not a rigid methodology, at the center of your healing journey. The key lies in developing what might be your most powerful tool, the ability to listen to your own body and trust what it tells you. Think of mindfulness not as meditation or forced calm, but as an internal navigation system, one that helps you make informed choices about what helps and what hurts. Consider Janice, who survived years of childhood sexual abuse. As an adult, she desperately craved physical connection, but would dissociate, mentally check out whenever someone touched her. Through mindfulness, she learned to identify her personal warning signals, her heart rate, stomach sensations, even a mental image of a rabbit that appeared when she was approaching her limits. These became her gauges, helping her determine which forms of touch she could tolerate and which would send her spiraling. This isn't mystical, it's neuroscience. What researcher Antonio Damasio calls somatic markers are bodily sensations that guide our decision-making, usually operating below conscious awareness. When you feel your stomach drop before accepting a job offer or sense tension in your shoulders around certain people, that's your body communicating. Trauma either drowns out your body's signals or makes them overwhelming. Mindfulness adjusts the volume to a useful level. Start small. Notice how your body responds when choosing what to eat or wear. Does your breathing change? Do your muscles tense? With practice, apply this awareness to bigger decisions, including which recovery approaches feel right. Stephanie repeated, "I can't get away," for 30 years after being attacked by wasps at age 11. Despite immediate rescue, her nervous system remained frozen in that terror. At 42, she watched her children play from inside the house, unable to join them. When a bee flew by during therapy, she collapsed in panic. Her therapist firmly stated, "You did get away." This simple truth, that she survived because she was sitting there as an adult, helped her brain properly file the memory as past, not present. During trauma, stress hormones impair your hippocampus, the brain structure recording when things happen. Without noting the trauma ended, your amygdala keeps sounding alarms. Writing an epilogue creates that missing timestamp. List everything since: graduations, relationships, career changes, technology that didn't exist then. Create a personal mantra. "I know I survived because I am here now." Make it specific. Include your current age, where you live, people in your life now. Most people recover from trauma without formally reviewing their memories, contradicting common treatment assumptions. Stuart experienced flashbacks after surviving a bombing. Rather than reliving the explosion, his recovery focused on observing physical sensations. He discovered every panic attack followed caffeine consumption. He'd been drinking espresso during the bombing, linking coffee taste and racing heart to danger. Eliminating caffeine controlled his symptoms without processing traumatic memories. Before deciding on memory work, evaluate three questions. Do you want to revisit traumatic memories? Do you lose connection with the present when focusing on the past? Might attention to your history make things worse? If any answer is yes, memory processing may not serve you, at least not yet. Janice, who survived incest, bullying, and car accidents, initially struggled with chaos, missing sessions, becoming overwhelmed, frequently dissociating. Through stabilization work like managing touch, strength training, and assertiveness practice, she developed reliable friendships and job consistency. Once stable, she chose not to pursue memory work, satisfied with her improved functioning. He is here in the room. When Liam, raped by a priest at age 8, spoke these words at 32, he wasn't being metaphorical. Trauma overwhelms your hippocampus with stress hormones, preventing proper timestamping of memories. Without these markers, your brain perceives the trauma as ongoing. The intervention was surprisingly simple. During flashbacks, his therapist firmly interrupted, "Stop, Liam. It is not happening now. What you're perceiving is a memory from when you were 8 years old." After several repetitions, he began saying, "I am remembering," initially as a question, then with increasing certainty. Eventually, he asked, "That's a memory? Is that what I've been suffering from all this time?" When confirmed, he sobbed, grieving for the first time. Apply this protocol. Identify internal sensations, name emotions, recognize the experience as memory, shift attention to external senses, what you see, hear, touch right now, affirm today's date, evaluate current safety. Use the mantra, "This is a memory, not reality. It happened in the past and is not happening now." The goal isn't erasing traumatic memories, but properly categorizing them as past events rather than present threats.
Even Captain Sully Sullenberger, who saved all 155 passengers on the Hudson River, later questioned whether he could have done more. This struggle intensifies for trauma survivors, who blame themselves for their responses. Josh, 40, became severely depressed after a hate crime attack where he froze while his friends fought back. His depression stemmed not from the attack, but from shame that he couldn't protect himself and loved ones. Learning that his freeze response was an unconscious survival mechanism, his amygdala making a split-second decision, provided enormous relief. Understanding that freezing serves vital survival functions, predators lose interest in dead prey, time perception slows, pain dulls, helped Josh forgive himself. Beyond self-forgiveness lies shame. Unlike other emotions discharged through crying or physical activity, shame dissipates through understanding and acknowledgement from supportive others. Eileen, who survived years of sexual abuse by her father, created two columns listing shameful behaviors, hers and his. She was stunned to realize her shame stemmed entirely from his actions. Writing an unsent letter helped her return the shame to where it belonged. Sharing an outline with a trusted friend whose horror validated her innocence helped dissipate her shame. When sharing shame experiences, approach carefully. Before revealing shame, ask others if they've ever felt ashamed to establish common ground. Ensure timing is right. Ask, "Is this a good time?" to protect yourself from rejection if the other person is distracted. Remember, shame is a social emotion, requiring social interaction for healing.
When Lily's 4-year-old son, Mecco, feared the swimming pool, they broke the challenge into tiny increments, first sitting at the edge with feet in water, then gradually progressing deeper. This ridiculously slow approach succeeded while preserving their relationship and Mecco's confidence. The same principle applies to trauma recovery. Rosa, who had panic attacks and cut herself after dissociating, was terrified of showers. Her therapist suggested sponge baths at the sink. This temporary avoidance significantly reduced her fear levels, decreased dissociation episodes, and consequently reduced cutting behavior. When she eventually returned to showering, her fear had diminished considerably. Physical movement offers another powerful path forward. Jack, a frail young man still suffering from childhood trauma, transformed through weight training. As his physical strength increased, his psychological state stabilized, his courage grew, and he secured a better-paying job. Movement counters persistent freeze responses, increases containment through improved muscle tone, and dissipates stress hormones. For many trauma survivors, increasing muscle tension rather than relaxing proves more beneficial, building emotional strength alongside physical strength. Start wherever you are. 3 repetitions of simple exercises, a short walk, gentle stretching. Create a routine that becomes self-rewarding because regular, manageable activity quickly builds momentum. If you struggle with consistency, reduce your goals, even to just 1 repetition. In trauma recovery, you're the ultimate authority. While experts guide, only you know what feels right. Some heal by helping others, like Francine, who overcame bank robbery trauma by tutoring a neighborhood girl. Others recover by building new memories rather than processing old ones.
Track progress through the subjective units of distress scale or concrete changes like better sleep and work attendance. If choosing a therapist, prioritize connection over method. No single approach works universally. Complete freedom from trauma reminders isn't realistic. The goal is maintaining balance when they occur, with shorter recovery times signaling real progress. Your trauma is real. Your survival is real. Your right to choose your path forward is equally real. By combining mindfulness, common sense, and strategies that resonate with you, create a personalized healing path, one honoring both past experiences and future possibilities.